Good morning. I'm Adria Fernandez. I'm a postdoc at the University of Minnesota in the Department of Agronomy and Plant Genetics. And I want to tell you a little bit about the project that we've been working on, looking at the effects of cover crop and fertilizer incorporation on the structure and function of microbial communities, specifically in soils under long-term organic management. So a quick overview of the project that we've been doing. We have three objectives here. One is to evaluate the impacts of cover crops and organic approved fertilizers on the composition of soil bacterial communities. The second is to evaluate the impacts of those organic amendments on soil nutrient cycling functions. And the third is to elucidate the relationships between bacterial community composition and soil function. So our overarching goal here is really to be asking the questions that that a lot of people have been discussing here. Basically, with the advent of affordable high-throughput DNA sequencing, we can gather these enormous data sets of information on microbial community structure, on who's living in the soil, and what we really need to know is can we translate that information into anything that might be useful for agricultural management decision making. We're focusing in organic systems because organic growers depend on biological nutrient cycling for fertility, and also because they are frequently given these exhortations to use cover crops, apply organic matter, it will increase your diversity and everything will be great. And so we are looking to explore a little bit further into those sort of broad exhortations. So we had three sites that have been under certified organic management for over 15 years, two collaborating farms and one university research center, all located in southern Minnesota. And our trial used 8 organic amendment treatments, 4 cover crops, hairy vetch, winter rye, oilseed radish, and buckwheat, 3 OMRI-approved fertilizers, a beef manure, a pelleted poultry manure product, also known as chickadee doo-doos, and Sustain 824, which is a commercially available bagged fertilizer, as well as a no amendment control. So we applied those amendments in the fall of 2012, incorporated the fertilizers in the fall, plowed down the cover crops in the spring, and then those study fields were planted to corn, and we sampled the soils during that corn growth period following the amendments in the May and July of 2013. And we gathered 3 data sets on those sampled soils, a physical chemical profile, basically everything that you would get out of a routine soil test, so moisture, pH, organic matter, and nutrient levels. The second data set was a functional profile, concentrating on nutrient cycling. So we had net nitrogen mineralization, total soil respiration, 3 carbon, nitrogen, and phosphorus cycling enzymes, and then corn yield. And then we also profiled the bacterial communities in those soils, and so we looked at the relative abundances of different bacterial taxa, as well as overall the diversity and OTU richness of the bacterial communities in those soils. So we did that community profiling using 16S sequencing. We gave community DNA extracts to the U of M Genomics Center, and they did amplicon preparation and sequencing for us on an Illumina MiSeq platform. And what we got back were 300 base pair paired end reads from the V5 to V6 hypervariable region of 16S bacterial DNA. We put that through mother software for data processing and analysis. It goes through quality filtering. Those sequences were aligned to the Silva database, and OTUs were picked at 97% similarity, which is generally considered approximately equivalent to a genus level classification, and then classified again to the Silva database. So a brief word on what we saw those treatments doing just to the soil physical chemistry, to the soil test values. The most notable thing was that a couple of our fertilizers, particularly the pelleted poultry manure, also the Sustain, gave us these very large, short-lived spikes in soluble nitrogen. So in the May samples, the nitrate nitrogen was very high in those treatments. Most of that was gone by July sampling. We didn't see the same in the beef manure. It was a very dry year, and probably we were getting a balance of mineralization and immobilization there, so the manure did not give us that nitrogen spike. Those fertilizers, even though they're organic approved, were not behaving too differently from what you would expect to see with a conventional fertilizer. They were also bringing the pH down a little bit. The poultry manure increased phosphorus, and we did not, in general, see strong effects on the soil tests with the cover crops. Although at the Farmington site, which was where we had the best cover crop biomass, we did see in the later season samples in July the covers were increasing our nitrogen, presumably as that biomass was being further broken down at that later season date. We also saw the treatments affecting our nutrient cycling functions. There was a lot of inconsistency across locations and between our sampling time points. But broadly speaking, we saw the most effects from winter rye and poultry manure. And in several instances, we did see them increasing our enzyme activities as well as our soil respiration. There were a couple of cases where we saw decreases in enzyme activity with the phosphatase there, with both the beef manure and Sustain, and also one of our oilseed radish, one of our cover crop treatments. We didn't see huge effects on corn yield, but at a couple of our sites, the fertilizers and vetch were increasing our corn yields, while at the other site we saw a little decrease in corn yields with rye and radish cover cropping. So the bacterial community that we were observing in those soils was extremely diverse. We had a lot of samples, so there was a computing bottleneck at the OTU cluster stage, so we had to do that. We had to do that in batches, so OTUs clustered separately for each site by sampling time point combination. At each of those sites at a given sampling time point, there were up to nearly 17,000 OTUs in those batches. And those were classified to 45 different bacterial phyla. But in both, we took both bulk field soil samples and also corn rhizosphere soil from that corn crop that followed the amendments. In both cases, those communities were dominated by actinobacteria, proteobacteria, acidobacteria, and Bacteroidetes. And contrary to the sort of casual assertions that are tossed out there, we actually, again, things were inconsistent, but we in some cases were seeing our organic amendments lowering bacterial diversity in our spring samples, in our May samples. And I think what was likely going on there is we put a lot of food into the soil, basically. And so the bacterial groups that were most able to take advantage of those large nutrient inputs were spiking in population. So we're not necessarily losing a lot of OTU richness, but we're seeing a change, seeing a diversity reduced with a change in OTU evenness. We did see diversity coming up in our July samples in the cover crops, particularly at the site where we had better biomass, and that is likely happening as those that cover biomass got to be further broken down at that later season sampling time point. So then we looked at overall the variance in these two profiles, our functional profile and our bacterial 16S profile. What was driving that variance? And we saw that really it was very strongly associated with locations, which in turn was very strongly associated with these physicochemical test values. which probably isn't a huge surprise to anybody. But here's, so this is a PCA of our 16S profiles, and you can see it circled in purple there. Most of our scatter is coming from either the locations or in the red circles, the differences between the bulk soil and rhizosphere samples. Those blue diamonds are the treatments, and there are some treatment effects on the soil community, but they are really not making up the bulk of the variance that we're seeing in these data sets. But then we went in and we did some variance partitioning. So what we were asking here is, there is variance in the soil functional profiles. And we can predict some of that variance just using the routine soil tests. And what we wanted to know was, when we also incorporate bacterial community structure data, these 16S profiles, does that improve our ability to predict function? And we found that, in fact, it did, that out of the explainable variance in soil functional profiles that could be attributed to soil physical chemical parameters and relative abundances of bacterial taxa, that about a third of it was uniquely associated with these taxon abundances. And so that's telling us that yes, in fact, these bacterial 16S profiles are giving us information about how the soil is likely to function that we didn't previously have, that we couldn't have gotten just out of straight up soil testing. So we have a few conclusions. First of all, that soil bacterial community structure is really largely driven by soil physical chemistry and site effects. That the cover crops and fertilizers that we applied do in fact affect nutrient cycling in the soil. That the effects of these organic amendments on microbial diversity were really mixed and not so easily summarized. And again, that this bacterial community structure data, that all of a sudden we can get these huge volumes of sequence data, and that that actually does improve our prediction of soil function compared to soil tests alone. And so obviously translating, we have that information in these profiles into something interpretable or that can be acted on in terms of management decisions is going to take a lot more research and a lot of modeling. But I think it's an interesting avenue, and I'm excited to keep working on it. And I think maybe I actually managed to leave a minute for questions. Yeah, we didn't do any of that for this experiment, and I agree that would be good information to have, but it wasn't within the scope of what we were working on here.